Building Blocks for Climate Reparations.
How Not to Apologize. A series about responsibility, justice, and the question of how we respond to the climate crisis. Published by Konzeptwerk Neue Ökonomie. Climate reparations, in a nutshell. Why do we need climate reparations? The climate crisis is profoundly unjust. It is not a crisis that affects everyone equally, nor one that everyone has caused. On one side are those historically and structurally responsible for it. Countries, corporations, and individuals that have benefited and continue to benefit from greenhouse gas-intensive production, consumption, and economic growth. Germany, for example, is responsible for around 3% of global historic emissions, despite making up 1% of the world's population. It has built immense wealth and technological capacity through centuries of industrialization and colonial exploitation, and it possesses the financial means to adapt to the consequences of climate change. On the other side are those who bear the brunt of the crisis. Communities, countries, and ecosystems in the global south that have contributed least to the problem. Cameroon, for instance, has produced only about 0.2% of historic global emissions, yet faces devastating impacts, from floods and droughts to the loss of livelihoods and biodiversity, without the sufficient resources to respond or recover. When we talk about climate reparations, it is essential to recognize that the injustice is not limited to unequal emissions. Germany's wealth, stability, and high standard of living are inseparable from the historic and ongoing exploitation of countries like Cameroon. Through colonialism, extractivism, unfair trade relations, and neocolonial economic structures, the raw materials, labor, and resources extracted from colonial regions have directly fueled Europe's industrialization and accumulation of wealth, while leaving formerly colonized nations structurally disadvantaged, indebted, and dependent. Cameroon's vulnerability to the climate crisis is, therefore, in turn, not merely the result of natural conditions. It is the outcome of historically produced inequalities, the result of centuries of dispossession, resource extraction, and deliberate underdevelopment. The same systems that caused the climate crisis continue to shape who suffers from it and who profits from it. The line between those who suffer from the climate crisis does not only run between rich and poor countries, it also runs within societies, along class divisions, gender hierarchies, racialized structures, and other intersecting forms of oppression. Marginalized groups, including women, indigenous peoples, black and other racialized communities, people with disabilities, and low-income households, are often both the least responsible for emissions and the most exposed to climate harms. Climate reparations are therefore neither charity nor aid. They are necessary to stop further injustices and ensure accountability and repair by redistributing resources, power, and decision-making to those most affected, a tool to address the root causes of the crisis, historical responsibility, structural inequality, and systematic exploitation, and the centerpiece of climate and global justice, a prerequisite for a healing process between the global South and North. According to Maxine Burkett, climate reparations must at least include three core elements: an apology, compensation, and a guarantee of non-repetition. An apology acknowledges the harm done and accepts responsibility for it. Compensation, whether monetary or through other forms of material redress, gives tangible or symbolic weight to that acknowledgement. The guarantee of non-repetition, perhaps the most transformative element, commits the perpetrating parties to structural changes that prevent the continuation or repetition of the injustice. To make these elements more concrete, we have identified 6 building blocks for climate reparations that explain how these could look like in practice, in Germany and beyond. About the project. Looking at the current state of civil society, we believe that climate reparations are the missing link in a comprehensive understanding of climate justice. Despite growing awareness of the connection between the climate crisis, colonialism, and racism, the concept of climate reparations remains underexplored and often misunderstood. One major reason is the lack of accessible materials on the topic, particularly in German-speaking contexts. With our project, Building Blocks for Climate Reparations, we aim to close this gap by providing accessible, grounded knowledge that links climate reparations to justice, responsibility, and systemic change. You are now listening to one of these building blocks. This fact sheet explores the topic of apologies and symbolic measures as an additional, necessary part of reparations. It does so by drawing conclusions from the failed German attempts to apologize for the genocide of the Ovoharero and Nama peoples. It is written by Nandi Masengo, Sima Luipert, Johannes Mabas Ortmann, and Felix Hen. As a political scientist, political economist, and dedicated reparative justice activist, Nandi operates at the vital intersection of international diplomacy and indigenous rights. Sima, a fourth-generation survivor of the Nama and Ovoharero genocide, serves as patron for international affairs on the NTLA's Technical Committee. As project's coordinator for international networks, genocide and reparations for the NTLA, Mabas fights tirelessly for the German genocide against the Nama and Ovoharero to be recognized. Felix works as a project officer at Werkstatt Ökonomie. In his current project, he is focusing on reappraising Germany's colonial past using Namibia as an example. Reparation programs that fail to acknowledge responsibility, in effect, attempt to do the impossible. Just as an apology is ineffective unless it involves an acknowledgement of responsibility for wrongdoing, an apology depends on such recognition, everything else being an excuse or an expression of regret. Reparation programs that fail to acknowledge responsibility do not provide reparation. Report of the UN Special Rapporteur on Truth, Justice, and Reparation. One element of reparations, including climate reparations, is an apology for the damage caused. Climate reparations are a relatively new field, with limited practical examples or theoretical sources to draw from. Thus, in this discussion paper, we examine the process of coming to terms with Germany's colonial past using the example of the genocide of the Ovoharero and Nama peoples, committed by the German Empire between 1904 and 1908 in what was then the colony of German Southwest Africa, now Namibia. The largely unsuccessful efforts to address the genocide to date can serve as an example of which forms of apology are appropriate and which are not, and in which overall political framework apologies must be embedded. If colonial crimes are dealt with seriously, this could also serve as a benchmark for how Germany could and should respond to international demands for reparations for the climate crisis. Our discussion paper begins with a preliminary thought. We initially had reservations about drafting a paper focused solely on apology and symbolic forms of reparations. However, this was the explicit task requested of us. Therefore, we want to make it clear. It is not an apology, but justice that matters. And appropriate reparations always consist of several inseparably linked forms, including material compensation. But even emotionally or symbolically charged gestures of apologizing remain worthless if they are not part of an appropriate overall context that also includes concrete material measures. in view of the enormous ongoing consequences of the genocide in Namibia and the climate crisis, limiting oneself to symbolic acts would in both cases be insufficient, because words alone cannot provide justice. It is in the deeds, including returning what you have stolen, including repairing what you have broken, where real language is found, where the apology can be deemed sincere and faithful, or merely a token gesture. To date, the German government has not apologized for the genocide of the Ovoharero and Nama peoples. Should an apology be made one day, the burden of the failed process of coming to terms with the past will weigh heavily. The genocide has been denied for too long, and the German government's political approach has been and continues to be too strongly influenced by its own strategic interests, as the following examples show. The retracted apology in 2004. Responsibility without support. In 2004, on the 100th anniversary of the Battle of Waterberg, Heidemarie Wieczorek-Zeul, then Federal Minister for Economic Cooperation and Development, apologized for the crimes committed by Germans. She said, "The atrocities committed at that time were what would today be called genocide, for which General von Trotha would be brought to justice and convicted today. We Germans acknowledge our historical, political, moral, ethical responsibility and the guilt that Germans incurred at that time. I ask you, in the spirit of the common Our Father, for forgiveness for our guilt." Her words caused a great stir, especially in Namibia. Many descendants of those affected saw it as a sign of hope. Finally, Germany seemed ready to end its denial. For decades, the German government had insisted on avoiding the term genocide at all costs. The argument was that the term genocide was legally invalid because the acts had taken place before the 1948 UN Genocide Convention. Instead, it spoke vaguely of a special responsibility for Namibia, or called the period a particularly dark chapter. In 1998, former German President Roman Herzog even described the events as a dispute between the German colonial administration and the Hereros that had been not okay. Strangely enough, the same logic would also apply to the Holocaust, a position Germany has rightly never advanced. Why then is it invoked in the case of the Ovoharero and Nama? Although Wieczorek-Zeul also uses the problematic wording of genocide from today's perspective, for a critique, see below, nonetheless, her speech was perceived as a novelty. For the first time, a German government representative had pronounced the word genocide and apologized. Therefore, her move was received with cautious respect in Namibia. But from the German government's point of view, it was an affront. The apology had not been coordinated, and Foreign Minister Joschka Fischer immediately distanced himself from it. He simply declared the speech to be the minister's personal opinion. A year earlier, Fischer had made his own position on this issue clear, which was in line with that of the government. "We are aware of our historical responsibility in every respect, but we are not hostages to history. Therefore, there will be no apology relevant to reparations." By shifting the speech into the private sphere, he effectively withdrew the apology, a move that was met with deep disappointment and anger in Namibia. After Wieczorek-Zeul's speech, it took more than 10 years for the issue of the term genocide to gain momentum again. The example from 2004 shows that an appropriate apology must be made by the highest state authority. Such a gesture should be based on a Bundestag resolution and declared by the federal president or federal chancellor in the presence of the self-elected representatives of those affected in Namibia. Only in this way can it be democratically legitimate, credible, and above all, binding. Yet, as mentioned above, authority alone is insufficient.
without genuine sincerity, and the activation of the legal instruments that translate acknowledgement into enforceable state obligations, even a high-level apology remains devoid of meaning. None of these elements have been present in Germany's engagements with the Oberherero and Nama to date, highlighting that, unlike its commitments to Jewish communities after 1945, Germany has yet to demonstrate the political will and faithfulness required for meaningful redress. The Return of Ancestors, Symbolism Without Responsibility. For the first time, in September 2011, 20 ancestors of Oberherero and Nama were returned to Namibia from Berlin's Charité Hospital. The remains had been brought to Germany at the beginning of the 20th century for racist research purposes. A high-ranking Namibian delegation of more than 70 members, led by Namibian Minister of Culture, Kasenambo Kasenambo, traveled to Berlin, but they were not received in accordance with diplomatic protocol. Not a single German minister took the time for an official meeting. The German government remained conspicuously silent throughout the trip and avoided making any clear statements. Only Secretary of State Cornelia Pieper was sent to attend the handover, consistently avoiding the word genocide in her speech. When protests and calls for an apology broke out in the hall, she left the ceremony even before the representatives of the Namibian delegation had had their say. What was planned as a solemn act of restitution ended in a political scandal. Although Pieper can be accused of lacking sensitivity and integrity, her behavior ultimately only reflected the fundamental attitude of the German government: the attempt to make gestures of reparation without first finding the language of apology was bound to fail. This event shows that symbolic gestures cannot have a healing effect without genuine responsibility and without the involvement of those affected. They remain mere management of shame rather than a form of apology or reparation. Secondly, restitutions must be well planned and prepared with sensitivity, and the regret associated with them must be taken seriously. Furthermore, restitution should be accompanied by commitment to non-repetition in the form of education and commemoration. The Reconciliation Agreement, Apology Under Conditions. Probably the most prominent example of how not to apologize is the so-called German-Namibian Reconciliation Agreement, officially called the Joint Declaration, which was negotiated between 2015 and 2021 by the German and Namibian governments with the aim of addressing the genocide committed by the German Empire against the Oberherero and Nama, as well as the Damara and San. To date, the agreement has not been signed. The reason for this is the massive resistance of the associations representing those affected, which strongly reject the agreement. A look at the history of its development and the outcome of the negotiations shows why. The first two arguments relate to the process, and the following four to the outcome of the negotiations. 1. No voluntary beginning. Germany did not come to the negotiating table of its own accord, but due to sustained political pressure, above all from the Oberherero and Nama communities themselves. Decades of advocacy, political lobbying, and landmark litigation, most notably the 2006 genocide motion by the Namibian parliament, initiated by Oberherero Paramount Chief Koyama Ruirako, and two U.S. lawsuits in 2001 and 2017, brought the genocide to global attention. Furthermore, Afro-German, migrant diaspora, and post-colonial civil society activism in Germany reinforced this pressure. The final acceleration towards an apology came through a diplomatic dilemma of Germany's own making. In 2015, Berlin officially recognized the Armenian genocide by the Ottoman Empire, breaking with its previous policy of avoiding the term for pre-1948 events. This inconsistency drew international scrutiny. including Erdogan's public call for Germany to confront its own history first. One fundamental flaw of the negotiations thus becomes clear. Germany acted not out of insight, but because it had been pressured, persistently, publicly, and for decades, by those very communities whose suffering it still struggles to acknowledge. 2. Exclusion of those affected. Instead of conducting an open, participatory trialogue with the direct and equal participation of the descendants of the victims, the governments opted for bilateral talks behind closed doors. This exclusion was by design and not by accident. Genuine reconciliation, however, cannot be achieved without the involvement of those affected. If those who should be at the center of such a process are effectively excluded, any apology loses its moral and political legitimacy. A purely bilateral approach is also structurally inadequate. Many over Herero and Nama now live in the diaspora, for example in Botswana or South Africa, and are therefore not represented by the Namibian government. When confronted with this critique, the German government repeatedly claimed that it could only negotiate with a sovereign state, and not directly with the affected communities, a claim that is not only politically constructed, but also historically inconsistent, as Germany's agreement with the Jewish Claims Conference shows. Over Herero and Nama, as equally transnational communities, can and must be recognized as direct negotiating partners, rather than being subsumed under a purely bilateral model. Furthermore, both governments are violating their human rights obligations with this approach. The ILO and UN conventions of the rights of indigenous people confirm that any matters affecting these groups must involve their directly appointed legitimate representatives. Any treaties must be based on prior and informed consent of the indigenous communities. Against this backdrop, it is hardly surprising that many of those affected perceive the joint declaration as an insult and a form of disenfranchisement. Their motto sums it up: everything about us, without us, is against us. 3. No full recognition of the genocide. Chapter 1 of the Joint Declaration lists the crimes committed. Crucially, however, the German government insists on a restrictive formulation, referring to genocide only from today's perspective. Since genocide is the central crime, this qualifier strips the acknowledgement of legal and moral force. This linguistic relativization significantly weakens the recognition of injustice and signals that the federal government seeks to avoid full responsibility, shielding itself with legal caution for fear of setting a precedent. To avoid legal consequences at any cost, the German government has repeatedly stuck to racist interpretations of the principle of intertemporality and other evasive arguments. In its legal brief seeking dismissal of the New York court case, Germany effectively justified its actions by arguing, "The inner dealings of the German Reich in one of its colonies is not governed by international law. Namibia was at the time a German colony, and the Nama and Herero were German subjects. The German Reich's regulating and taking of its own national's property within its own territory does not constitute a violation of international law." Such an approach betrays a strategic attitude governed by fear of consequences and self-interest, not insight. This means that the statement lacks precisely what every sincere apology needs: humility, clarity in naming the injustice, and the full assumption of responsibility. 4. Conditional reconciliation from above. For an apology to be meaningful, the injured party must retain the power to reject it. When acceptance is structurally pre-inscribed, what appears as an apology functions instead as a controlled political arrangement. However, a major flaw in the joint declaration is that it codifies a package solution. In a single act, it simultaneously establishes Germany's acknowledgement of guilt and responsibility, with the qualification, from today's perspective, the acceptance of this acknowledgement by the Namibian government and population, while at the same time implying forgiveness for this in the form of a fixed sum of money, described as final. Findings from transitional justice and human rights work show how important a survivor and victim-centered approach is. Furthermore, the joint declaration is not a request. The German federal government is not asking for forgiveness, but rather declaring forgiveness to be given. An apology must not be part of negotiations. Rather, the perpetrator should unilaterally acknowledge what they have done and ask for forgiveness. This is because including an apology in a negotiated solution runs the risk of it becoming conditional, as the following example shows. 5. Conditions on the part of the perpetrator. An appropriate apology does not impose conditions. The fact that the joint declaration does not meet this criterion is most evident in its handling of the question of reparations. From the outset, the German government not only ruled out any form of direct redress for those affected, but it also even insisted that the words reparation and compensation should not appear anywhere in the negotiations. Despite repeated calls to do so from both the associations representing those affected and Namibian government representatives. By excluding these terms, the German side effectively removed the entire spectrum of possible reparative measures, material and non-material alike, from the outset. Ruprecht Polenz, the German government's special envoy in the negotiations with Namibia, justified the exclusion of the term reparations by saying that the aim was to prevent misunderstandings and to speak instead of healing wounds. In reality, however, the aim was to avoid legitimate legal claims for redress, and the terms used served as a linguistic substitute to avoid legal responsibility without having to relinquish the moral high ground. This use of healing wounds has little to do with what genuine healing would require. Real healing wounds should provide for restoring relationships and rehabilitation of those who may have suffered losses and were traumatized in this process. The question in the Namibian case is, how do you restore relationships without any clear commitment to policies and strategy that bring justice and equity? Sensitivity in personal interaction between perpetrator and victim must be the first step in paving the way for genuine process for reconciliation to begin. How else do we want to build community-led peace agendas when the very communities are denied the space to do so? How do we mitigate the disastrous effects of the deep-seated socioeconomic and political tensions which have embittered our relationships with the perpetrator? The unmasked truth of the German government's stance on reparations was summed up in 2019 by Christian Schlager, the German ambassador to Namibia at the time. In Tanzania, we are experiencing the opposite of what we saw in Namibia. No reparations are being demanded there. The country wants to forget its colonial history and build a healthy relationship. They want to see Germany continue to support them. We are one step further ahead there. Instead of paying reparations, Germany is offering to the Namibian state 1.1 billion euros spread over 30 years to be used for development projects. No matter what happens with this money, development projects of any amount are never a substitute for reparations. They are based on the generosity of the donor. This turns the descendants of the victims into objects of charity instead of recognizing them as independent actors with legitimate rights. 6. The long-desired closure. Paragraph 20 of the Joint Declaration states that the agreement means to settle all financial aspects of the issues relating to the past addressed in this Joint Declaration, by reducing redress for genocide to a single monetary transaction. The declaration treats a profound historical injustice with legacies that continue to reverberate today as if it could be conclusively closed, revealing the deeply inadequate mindset underpinning the agreement. even though representatives of the German government have repeatedly emphasized that this should not be a final line drawn under the past, the wording is very much in keeping with the notion to settle once and for all. It is an attempt to finally end the debate about the colonial past and to limit responsibility both legally and morally. This achieves exactly the opposite of what a process of apologizing should achieve. Instead of enabling healing, it gives the impression that Germany wants to manage its colonial guilt and then move on with the agenda. Additionally, this infringes on the principle of sovereignty, as it seeks to restrict Oberherero and Namo communities and their representatives from ever addressing these issues again. It exposes a racial double standard. Germany does not impose similar constraints on its ongoing negotiations with the Jewish Claims Conference or Israel. What constitutes a good apology? Although the German approach to addressing genocide cannot serve as a model, examining its shortcomings offers valuable insights into the criteria for a meaningful apology. Whether an apology is considered appropriate is decided solely by those to whom it is addressed. It can be perceived as sincere or as an empty gesture. A variety of factors determine whether an apology can foster trust and healing or deepen mistrust and hurt. 10 key elements of an appropriate apology are self-initiative. The apology is made of one's own accord, not only under pressure or at the request of those affected. Identification of the actions and victims. It clearly states the actions, crimes, and corresponding victims that are the subject of the request for forgiveness. Recognition of wrongdoing. It describes these actions unambiguously as morally wrong and/or unlawful. Assumption of responsibility. The person or institution speaking assumes full responsibility for the wrongdoing committed, without relativization, deflection, or distancing. They act from a position of legitimate authority, for example, as a political representative of the perpetrators. Expression of sincere regret. The apology expresses genuine compassion, shame, and remorse for what has happened. Request for forgiveness. It is accompanied by a genuine, not strategically motivated, request for forgiveness. Unconditionality. The apology is not linked to any quid pro quo or conditions. It must be made in the knowledge that it may not be accepted. Reparations. This includes material and symbolic measures to compensate for the damage caused. These reparations should be motivated by a sincere desire to undo what has happened, as far as possible, in the knowledge that this can never be fully achieved in reality. No closure. An apology should be the start of an open process of reparation. It must never draw a line under the past. An apology is therefore not a one-off symbolic act, but a process, ensuring non-repetition. Finally, the person apologizing commits to actively ensuring that the injustice is not repeated, for example, through institutional, political, or social changes. What symbolic measures would be appropriate? Having outlined how not to apologize, we will now consider possible further symbolic measures of reparation that can and should reinforce and underline an apology. Public statement. The federal president or federal chancellor should address the German public with an official statement. National Day of Remembrance. In consultation with those affected, a Day of Remembrance should be introduced to be observed in both Germany and Namibia. Memorial sites. Establishment of a central memorial site in Berlin with sufficient funds for historical education. In addition, decentralized memorial sites in public spaces should be created and places such as streets, cemeteries, institutions, etc. be renamed in a decolonial manner. Germany must also support and fund equivalent commemoration efforts in Namibia, including the protection and preservation of sites that are currently being systematically neglected, desecrated, or erased. Education. The topics of colonialism and genocide must be made compulsory in school curricula, and teachers must be trained. A binational textbook commission with the participation of those affected should prepare historical research findings for teaching purposes. Germany must also support and fund equivalent curriculum development in Namibia, where this history is largely absent from school materials. Producing, revising, and disseminating such educational resources requires dedicated financial commitment from the perpetrator state. Education and technology transfer. Scholarship programs for young Ovaherero and Nama, youth and cultural exchange programs, as well as the promotion of research and education in Namibia and Germany should be initiated. These measures should be complemented by residencies and training at institutions currently holding relevant collections, so that communities acquire the specialized skills and know-how needed to care for and conserve materials once repatriated, thus ensuring the transfer of the soft infrastructure required for long-term safeguarding. Return of artifacts. For Ovaherero and Nama communities, the return of all items and the repatriation of ancestors' human remains is a paramount demand. All objects and remains taken to Germany during colonialism should be presumed unlawfully acquired, applying the principle of reversal of the burden of proof. By recognizing colonialism as a context of overall injustice, it assumes that even items misleadingly classified as sold were unlawfully obtained unless proven otherwise. Provenance research must be adequately funded, bureaucratic obstacles removed, and the trade in human remains banned immediately. To ensure timely and community-led restitution, provenance research must prioritize and fund Ovaherero and Nama researchers, enabling them to lead the clarification and recovery of their heritage. Trauma and conflict resolution. Financial support for projects aimed at active conflict transformation and broad-based trauma resolution should be provided in Germany. Research loss of culture and promote indigenous knowledge creation. Systematic research should document the cultural, social, and spiritual losses suffered by the Ovaherero and Nama during and after colonialism. This includes preserving endangered languages, traditional practices, oral histories, and other intangible cultural heritage. Efforts should also support the creation and revitalization of indigenous knowledge systems, enabling communities to lead research, transmit cultural memory, and integrate these insights into education, cultural institutions, and public discourse. These efforts must be funded by Germany. This culture of remembrance must not limit itself to the genocide, but also look at the German colonialism as a whole. It would be wrong to frame the genocide as the personal misconduct of individual actors or an outlier in an otherwise supposedly civilizing colonialism. This would mean an unacceptable discharge of the system that produced it. Rather, it was the logical consequence of colonial rule, which was based on racism, expropriation, exploitation, and violence. Germany's handling of the genocide of the Ovaherero and Nama illustrates how apologies and reparations do not work. Credible apologies, on the other hand, require full recognition of the injustice, active involvement of those affected, responsibility on the part of authorized representatives, symbolic and material measures, and a guarantee that the injustice will not be repeated. A just and commensurate reparations package can only be defined and accepted by those directly wronged, in direct consultation with them, rather than through third parties. Symbolic gestures alone are not enough. However, when they are authentic, voluntary, and embedded in a comprehensive process of taking responsibility and a willingness to make amends, they can have an impact. The lessons learned from this process extend beyond the reappraisal of colonialism. In the context of global climate justice, too, only the combination of recognition, responsibility, and concrete material and symbolic measures can create genuine, credible justice. Without recognition, there can be no responsibility. Without responsibility, no justice. And without justice, there can be no reconciliation. What happened in the colony of German Southwest Africa? The genocide of the Ovaherero and Nama took place mainly between 1904 and 1908 in what was then the German colony of German Southwest Africa, now Namibia. Following uprisings against expropriation, oppression, and violence, the German Empire under General Lothar von Trotha responded with extreme brutality. Extermination orders led to the deaths of tens of thousands through starvation, thirst, shootings, and imprisonment in concentration camps, where atrocities such as forced labor and racist medical experiments took place. According to the estimates, up to 80% of the Ovaherero and 50% of the Nama, as well as many Damara and San, lost their lives. The genocide is considered the first of the 20th century and is a central chapter of colonial violence in German history. What are the consequences of the genocide today? Many Ovaherero and Nama have lived in institutionalized poverty for generations because they were robbed of their fertile land, livestock, and much of their cultural heritage by the Germans. Both groups remain minorities in Namibia, with many living in the diaspora. The diaspora communities face not only the loss of culture and language, but also the denial of the right of return. The inequality is particularly visible in the land issue. Over 70% of commercially used farmland remains in the hands of white, often German-speaking settlers, often on land that was stolen from the communities during the genocide. The mass murder of Nama and Ovaherero people has diminished their political power and undermined their ability to influence decision-making. Green hydrogen from Namibia. The German government's handling of the Hyphen Hydrogen project in Namibia is a prime example of how superficial and symbolic its efforts to come to terms with German colonialism remain. In one of her first speeches as Development Minister on Africa Day, Reem Alibhali Radovan emphasized that only those who acknowledge Africa's experiences with colonialism, slavery, imperialism, who take responsibility for their own history, will find true partnerships on the continent, citing, of all things, the planned megaproject for the production of green hydrogen in Namibia as a positive example of such a partnership. From a German perspective, Namibia is considered a supposedly favorable location for green hydrogen and has therefore become the focus of Germany's hydrogen strategy. However, the Hyphen project, which is supported by the German government and involves the German company Enertrag, among others, is highly problematic for historical, ecological, and economic reasons. It is planned on land from which Nama communities were forcibly expelled during German colonialism. Production there is primarily intended for export to Europe, while Namibia bears the ecological risks and is being pushed into a resource-based dependency with potential debt, a classic pattern of colonial division of labor. Massive interventions in highly sensitive ecosystems and infrastructure projects in the vicinity of Naami Nus Lüderitz, including the former Shark Island concentration camp, also threaten biodiversity and key sites of remembrance of colonial crimes. Rhetorically, the German government presents itself as sensitive to colonial conditions. In material matters, however, especially when it comes to securing Germany's energy needs, colonial structures are perpetuated.
You listen to How Not to Apologize, from the series Building Blocks for Climate Reparations, published by the Konzeptwerk Neue Ökonomie. For more information on the topic of climate reparations and our other work, visit www.knoe.org/en.